Welcome to Quimper UU Fellowship. We hope you enjoy this recording of the reading and two homilies from our December 20th, 9 a.m. service. Victoria Poling's homily is entitled, What Sparks Your Joy? And Reverend Bodie's homily is entitled, The Life-Changing Magic of Tidying Up. Thanks for listening.
I do want to do a reading that recognizes the winter solstice that takes place tomorrow. And of course, the root of Christmas and all the festivities and celebrations at this time of the year is related to the rhythms of nature and the shortening of the days and the lengthening of the nights and now the beginning of the return of the sun. Winter solstice, of course, has been celebrated in cultures the world over for thousands of years. And this celebration of light, the rebirth of the sun in old Europe, was known as Yule. The Norse Yule, J-U-L. So the wheel of the year is turning. The sun will be coming back. Listen to this poem of celebration at the turning of the wheel, a poem by Susan Cooper titled The Shortest Day. So the shortest day came, and the year died, and everywhere down the centuries of the snow-white world came people singing, dancing to drive the dark away. They lighted candles in the winter trees. They hung their homes with evergreen. They burned beseeching fires all night long to keep the year alive. And when the New Year's sunshine blazed awake, they shouted, reveling. Through all the frosty ages, you can hear them echoing behind us. Listen. All the long echoes sing the same delight this shortest day as promise wakens in the sleepy land. They carol, feast, give thanks, and dearly love their friends, and hope for peace, and so do we here, now, this year, and every year. Welcome, Yule.
Thank you so much, choir, and Paul, and Ukui. I'm just filled with so much joy this morning to be here, to be standing in front of you on this Sunday of joy. It fills me with the definition of joy, great feelings of pleasure, of happiness, and I'm so grateful because it isn't always this way for me. In fact, this year has been a really difficult time. I've been struggling with some health challenges, some things happening in my body that I didn't understand, and so I went out and I sought advice. And that advice became complicated. I got a lot of conflicting information about how to heal, how to regain my sense of health and well-being, my happiness, my pleasure in my body. It got really complicated. At a certain point, it became hard to get up in the morning. And I just, you know, I didn't want to. I didn't want to get up. I didn't want to try to be joyful. I didn't want to talk to anybody. It was really hard. And so I want to share with you something today that was so important to me, that brought back my joy. It started like this. I was at work, going through the motions, muddling through, when someone who you all know very well, Joseph Bednarik, who's a colleague of mine, came to my office and he knocked on my door and he said, "Hey, have you heard about this book? It's called The Life-Changing Magic of Tidying Up." Well, I could use some life-changing magic, but tidying up? You mean like cleaning my house? Really? Okay, I'm interested. My curiosity is piqued. So I went home this afternoon and I said hello to my housemate and I said, "Hey, I heard about this book, The Life-Changing Magic of Tidying Up." And she said, "Oh, I just got a copy of that. Do you want to borrow it?" I thought, wow, there's a sign. This is the first time I've gotten the same advice twice in one day. No conflicts, no confusion. So I borrowed the book and I open it up, and there on page 3, the Japanese author and organizing consultant, Marie Kondo, writes, "A dramatic reorganization of the home causes a correspondingly dramatic change in lifestyle and perspective. It is life transforming." My gut reaction was, yes, this sounds right. My heart said, "Oh, I want to do this. I want to clean my house." And my head said skeptically, "Well, okay, I guess there's nothing to lose. You could use a change. Sure, okay, we'll try this." So the magic of this method is not in putting your things away. It's not in picking what things to get rid of right away. It's in deciding what to keep. And you don't decide using your head. You don't look at things and say, "Oh, I might use this someday. I'm going to put it here in this cabinet just in case. I'm going to hold on to it." It's not what you do. You pick up objects and you ask, "Does this spark joy? Does this spark joy?" Well, this method was such a relief to me, because I really wanted to be able to use my passions as my guide. I wanted to regain that feeling of warmth inside that I wasn't feeling. But doing this method also felt a little bit illicit. I'm a scientist by training. That's what I got my degree in. And I just had this feeling that there was some great skeptic and academic critic in the sky who was going to come down and say, "Cite your sources, that this is going to work." Using your heart, using your intuition about what sparks joy, no way. Show me some dead European white male who will give some credibility to this process. So here, to appease the great critic in the sky, is my citation on the wisdom of the senses from a credible source, poet John Keats, whose quote is in your order of service. He says, "I am certain of nothing but of the holiness of the heart's affections and the truth of the imagination. What the imagination seizes as beauty must be truth." He goes on to say, "I am more zealous in this affair because I have never yet been able to perceive how anything can be known for truth by consecutive reasoning." So there you have it. John Keats says so. I'm relieved. Okay, now I can get on to sorting my things with joy. So what I learned in this process is what my joy feels like. I would pick things up. Marie Kondo says, start with your closet. So, you know, I'd take out a sweater and I'd hold the sweater and, oh, this sweater is so soft and, ooh, it feels good. This feels good. Yes, this is joy. I'm keeping this sweater. By asking this question over and over, I started to practice. Learning, as any teacher will tell you, comes from repetition, from practicing. So as I practice asking, does this spark joy? I started to recognize, yes, joy, not so much, not joy. And as a result, I started to surround myself by things that I found beautiful. Beauty, truth. I gained a new confidence in this way of intuitive decision making. So now you might be asking, what about those things that don't spark joy? I have some of those things in my house, I'm pretty sure. Well, let me tell you a little story. Marie Kondo also says she has some choice things to say about paperwork. So one of the first things that I dove into with gusto that did not spark joy was my filing cabinet. And I pulled out my bank statements and those insurance explanations of benefits, and I looked at them and I felt a lot of gratitude because I have some money and I have health insurance. But those statements, those don't spark joy. So I got rid of all of that paperwork, and I also got rid of the filing cabinet because I didn't need it anymore. Now I just have a little box of hanging files, that's it. I keep things like poems and collage items. Oh, and 7 years of taxes, you know, the essentials. Maybe you have a few filing cabinets to get rid of in your home. That was the easy part, right? The harder part was coming to those sentimental items, those objects that are so emotionally charged that they're actually they're their own filing cabinets, they're storage units of joy. They're holding on to joy, and the joy that they're holding on to is past joy. It's from some time behind us, or actually, really some time in front of us. We can see our past, but we can't see our futures, right? So the next very important practice that I learned from tidying up was this. When you put your house in order, you put your affairs and your past in order too. As a result, you can see quite clearly what you need in life and what you don't, and what you should and shouldn't do. So before discarding any item, it's important to release the joy back out by giving thanks and offering gratitude to that item for what it brought into your life at the time. So whether it was Aunt Erna's ugly Christmas sweater or whether it was paperwork, it's important to say thank you. This brought me information, this brought me the love from the giver, and I received that love, and now I'm releasing it. Doing so makes new space, a sense of spaciousness. I had at least 5 boxes of recycling, several boxes to go to Goodwill, and suddenly there were clear counters in my house. There were clear closets. I also discovered that there were some objects that were very, very hard to pass on. And I discovered that I was also in denial about where I am in my life. I thought, I don't have that much stuff. I'm still a tall ship sailor, having adventures out on the ocean, teaching kids about the natural world. I'm still in my early 20s. I'm living out of a sea bag. Well, no, I've been in Port Townsend for 7 years. I have a home full of stuff, and now I wear reading glasses. So I discovered that I had a stealth collection hiding in my closet. It was a collection of coats and jackets that were holding memories that kept my past alive and in front of me every single morning When I opened that closet, there were those memories. To put my affairs in order meant processing that past and figuring out who I am right now. So I pulled out the first coat and I held it up and asked, "Does this spark joy?" And I felt, "No, yes, maybe." I can't get rid of this. This is important. This coat was given to me by someone. This kept happening. I didn't know what to do. I sat down, sat still for a little bit, looked at the coats, and I reflected. I didn't do anything. I didn't think anything. Sorry, great critic, no thinking involved here. And then it came to me. I know, I'll just line up all of the coats in a timeline. In the order in which they were received, first in, first out, we'll try this one at a time. And so I picked up the coats and I just remembered all of the stories. There was my mother's coat that she gave me that was hers when she went off to Europe as a young woman that I had still hanging in my closet. She gave it to me when I went to Germany as an exchange student when I was in high school and left home for the first time. There was a coat given to me by a woman who took me under her wing when I was an undergraduate researcher living and working in China, feeling lost and alone and confused. There was a tough Carhartt jacket that I got for myself when I joined my college logging sports team. Yes. Chainsaws, axe throwing, the whole nine yards. It was big, burly. There are these burly dudes on the back with a big crosscut saw, and I felt really, really safe and tough in that jacket. There was the blazer that my boss bought for me. She had two sons, and she mentored me like a daughter. All of those, I gave thanks to. And I sat there feeling so much gratitude, so much joy, and then I realized what these coats were. They were coats of armor. Coats of armor to keep me safe going out into the world as a young woman, as a teenager, as someone in my early 20s, to have adventures, to try to live my ideals the way we teach our young people here, to try to keep alive that flame, that sense of purpose, to discover what's important not only in the world, but for me to be doing in the world. In that witnessing, I had a moment suddenly where I felt, as the poet Deborah Landau puts it in her poem, Minutes, Years. She says, "One summer, there was no girl left in me. It gradually became clear. It suddenly became." Thanking and letting go of the coats took on the weight of a rite of passage, a ritual of putting away the things of a young woman in order to live my place into the world more fully as a maturing adult, to develop new ways of being and of giving my gifts. This also gave me some recognition and understanding that the overwhelm and exhaustion I was feeling around trying to heal was also a sign that here lies a path for changing your life. As the poet Rainer Maria Rilke says in his letters to a young poet, "You must change your life." He also says, "Be generous with the questions." Now I'm paraphrasing, but love those questions. Love the questions in your heart, and someday you'll live your way into an answer. So the most burning question that I had right now was, of course, what sparks joy? And I started applying this to the rest of my life. Eating food, what food items spark joy? It turns out beets, apples, and kale, yes, they spark joy. This box of crackers, not so much. Okay. Exercise, does yoga spark joy for me? No, it doesn't. Surprisingly, it was weightlifting. Weightlifting sparks joy. I like to pick up heavy things and put them back down. Who knew? And so this is also when there was a turn in the experience of cleaning my house. One afternoon, I was with my housemate cleaning the kitchen, and she handed me a bowl, and she said, "This doesn't spark my joy. Does it spark your joy?" And so I received the bowl, and I felt immediately that I was holding something sacred, not just an ordinary bowl. Imagine that. There could be a sacred object hiding in your house amongst all the things that don't spark joy. This bowl became a symbol for a new practice for me, a deeper spiritual practice. I call it my empty bowl wisdom practice. The knowledge that I received from this is that I don't have to hold on to joy so tightly. I don't need it bound up in those coats of armor. I don't need to be afraid that if I lose my joy, I can't get it back. I won't be able to find it. Because what this bowl teaches me is that it is possible to find joy by becoming empty, by letting go, by breathing out, by sitting still, by not moving, not thinking, not doing, not talking, not communicating, not being nice, not being polite, not engaging, just breathing out and letting go. This is how I invite my joy. I sit down and I watch the bowl. There's nothing in it. There's nothing in it. Thank God there's nothing in it. I don't have to do anything about it. The bowl doesn't need me for anything. I'm not responsible. There's nothing to take care of there. It's empty. Hallelujah. And then I can ask that question, where is my joy? Questions are so powerful. They sweep out all those old thoughts and feelings, making space for something new to arrive. This is also called praying. So this then is the way, my way, that I just discovered for myself. It's not new. It's encoded in so many teachings, Buddhist teachings, teachings of Jesus, New Age teachings. Wherever you look for your teachings, there will be an empty bowl wisdom. Where this came back really close to home was when I started thinking about healing. Now what do I do in my body? And I would sit watching this bowl, inviting good feeling to come in, breathe out. And that's when I realized this is also empty body wisdom. Empty body. That for me, that was the life-changing magic. Because when I'm emptied out, I become conscious of how warm I am, that I'm alive, that I'm breathing, that my body has its own intelligence, that intelligence can tell me what I need next and how to heal and how to be alive, how to be filled with the spark of joy. And when I have that consciousness and that awareness, the joy arrives. It's sparked. It returns. And I know that I can trust that. I know I can trust that passion. I know I can trust that intuition and restore and renew. So in this way, my faith is confirmed, my hope is restored, the love that I have to give is renewed. And so here's my final gift to you. Your body is like this empty bowl. When holding a spark, this bowl becomes slowly, gradually, a chalice. You are your own chalice. Your spark of joy will light you up. To make space for that joy, here's a little poem to help cultivate some quiet inside. This poem is by Anna Sweer from her book, Talking to My Body. It's called, There is a Light in Me. Whether in daytime or in nighttime, I always carry inside a light. In the middle of the noise and the turmoil, I carry silence. Always, I carry a light and silence. Thank you.
just a little bit to what Victoria has introduced to us this morning, or at least what she's introduced to me, because this is new to me, this method for getting a hold of your life, for transforming it. What you might think of as a simple technique for tidying up your house or organizing your possessions turns out to be a spiritual discipline of religious dimension that, in a sly, crafty, underground way, gets you to actually do what I've been preaching about in complex mythological imagery and highly nuanced psychological distinctions for years, namely to awaken to your life and what is around you. I say sly, crafty, underground, for here's this little, unpretentious-appearing book. It's titled, as Victoria has said, The Life-Changing Magic of Tidying Up. That's the kind of title that you would find in magazine articles in Redbook or Oprah or Better Homes and Gardens. This little book takes you in by prescribing in very simple words and very simple illustrations a very simple way of reducing the clutter of possessions in your life. And who wouldn't want to do that? But oh no, this little book, if followed, will turn your life over. So I've concluded, after reading this little book this year, this week, I just read it this week, I finished it yesterday, that it's a tricky way of getting us Americans to practice religion. We Americans, with all our possessions, overscheduled, overcommitted, overworked, overstuffed, this is a way to get us to pay attention and to wake up to our life and what is around us. So I say, buyer beware. This is a religious treatise in disguise. This little book is tricky in another way as well. The method prescribed, so very simple, is first to discard possessions and then concern yourself with organizing and storing them. And don't mix the process. Do the discarding first, then concern yourself with organizing them. And enticingly, it says, you should discard in one fell swoop. Not piecemeal, or you'll never do it. But discard your possessions all at once, which has great appeal to me. I say, I can take some time to do that. Ah, but the fine print says this fell swooping, one-time process of discarding typically takes about 6 months. How very un-American. It's written by a Japanese person. As the reason for that, it will take that long, as Victoria has described, is you have to take every blessed thing that you own in hand. Each piece of clothing, each cooking and eating utensil, each book, each folder of papers, you take each in hand, you touch it, you hold it, and in a quiet space without distractions, you ask, as she is saying, of each thing, does this spark my joy? You start with the easier possessions to discard, like clothing. You gather all your clothes, every article of clothing from every room in your house, and you put them all in one place, and then you go through them piece by piece. The author suggests subcategories like tops, bottoms, jackets, shoes, socks, etc. But you connect with each piece, inquiring of it, does this article currently spark my joy? If it does, you can keep it. If it doesn't, out it goes, to create space for your present and future life. Typically, the author says 2/3 of one's clothes are discarded in this process. I can see my way through this part of the spiritual discipline for tidying up. Then we start to move to the more difficult parts. Books, papers, photos, and other personal mementos. Already I can feel the emotional pain of letting go. Am I, for example, to let go? Am I to let go of this childhood football helmet that has followed me around all my life? And my home study has been closing in on me for years. Flossie, I can see you. I've brought a whole number of books to the study here, to the office here. But books and papers are now accumulating on the floor and creeping toward my office chair. Periodically, I attempt to resist the swelling tide, and I push them aside, I pile them up, or I find new bookshelves, more storage spaces. How can I get rid of these books? I might need them sometime. I might actually read them sometime. But furthermore, the thoughts and ideas of my life are there. When I see the books on my shelf, I remember where I was. I remember what was going on, and how can I let them go? Just thinking about it gives me anticipatory pain. The author assures us that, quote, discarding those things that don't spark joy has no adverse effects whatsoever, and further, that the process of learning what does truly spark our joy will transform our lives. And I must say, I'm intrigued, I'm tempted, and I'm worried. So, Victoria, I asked you to join me this Sunday to talk about joy. And instead, you have brought me a whole new spiritual discipline and the possibility of a total life transformation, and also the possibility of great existential angst. Fortunately, Victoria, I have a way that you can redeem yourself. Because one of the things that always brings me immediate and unquestioned joy is to hear her play the violin. So if you would play a violin piece for me, all would be forgiven.